and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr. Thanks for being with us this week. I know everybody has a busy schedule, and we'd love to have you with us. Tonight I have with us a good friend of mine, someone who's become a very good friend of mine, I feel like, and an amazing physician, both allopathic and holistic. And tonight we're going to talk about spirituality. We're going to talk about nutritional deficiencies and a conference that he's going to be doing very soon that you can go and see him. Dr. Jim Roach, how are you?
I'm terrific.
Thank you for taking the time to be with us.
Oh, always my pleasure.
You're always great to talk to. And I think we talked before the show, and I told you, for whatever reason, I've got a focus on the MTR mutation that goes along with many people with the MTHFR mutations. Mm-hmm. And before we even get started with that, though, sorry to get out of line, I'd like for people to understand that even though that Dr. Roach is a physician, we're not attempting to treat or diagnose you, that we're providing what we're doing for informational purposes only. Please use it for that purpose and take it up with your own private healthcare physician. So before we get started, can you tell us a little bit about you, Dr. Roach, and where people can find you?
Yes. I'm in Midway, Kentucky. Everyone knows where that is, right? Central Kentucky, in a town of 1,500, and my practice has been here, I've been here in practice for, golly, over 30 years now. And you can find me on www.droach.net or the midwaycenter.com. And that latter one is for patients, and the first one is more for practitioners.
And you, one more thing before we move on. You're going to do a conference soon. Please tell us
right.
A bit about that so people can be perusing that as we talk.
So, Eva, you know, what's, I think, unique about what I do is that I've been to 34 conferences over the last 10 years, and so I've been to nutritional conferences, I've been to botanical medicine conferences, integrative holistic medicine, anti-aging medicine, functional medicine. And I combine all of that, connect all the dots with that, so particularly the botanical medicine, so that is unique. So on May 16th and 17th, the Friday and Saturday, we are having a special event for 2 days where I'm going to try to teach everything I know as best as I can, as fast as I can, in all of those areas. And then also I want to teach profitability, how practitioners, you know, so many practitioners, particularly in the integrative realm, are suffering financially because to spend time with patients, they're not able to get reimbursement for that through insurance companies for that extra time. And fortunately, I figured out a formula through my office to become very successful. My income hit bottom in 2003, and now it's an order of magnitude higher than it was in 2003. So I'll also be educating practitioners in that regard. So I'm very excited about it.
That's an important thing. I recently, as you know, moved from the North Georgia mountains back to Atlanta. And when I moved back down here, I had to find a new pediatrician for my child because I had not, you know, been holistic before I moved up there for my child, and now I want to be. I went from physician to physician to physician down here, and not one of them. Not only did they not know, they weren't even willing to treat him because they said, look, we don't know about that, and we don't want to learn it.
Yeah.
We don't want to learn about nutrition. Let me give you a prescription. So, gosh, that's an important. And that's why they don't want to learn, because there's no, you know, they don't know how to get paid for it.
Right.
So, anyway. Your
doctors are under such pressure to see a patient in 10, 12 minutes financially because the reimbursement, as the years have gone by, the reimbursement has dropped for the amount of time that they spend. So to maintain their income level, they have to see more and more people in a shorter period of time, all they have time to do is write a prescription, and they don't like patients who have lots of questions.
Are you going to be telecasting that or making it available for, I know some physicians here that would probably like to go but not be able to get
right
there. Will there be
sure
a way?
Sure, and incidentally, I will be offering scholarships to the event because I really want it to be available to practitioners of all sorts. You know, I'm open to MDs and chiropractors and naturopaths and even life coaches and nutritionists, you know, anyone who wants to come. And the price tag is steep because I feel like my time is valuable. But that said, yeah, we offer scholarships and to be sure that everyone can be there.
Well, that's a wonderful thing. I'm going to contact you later about that.
Oh, so I will. We also will be recording that, and we may type up information from that. So, yeah, we intend to have a record of that event. And so I do think that either recording or written material from that will be available.
Do they get continuing medical education credit?
No, it's not. And the reason is that I'm going to be very specific with this event. I'm going to lay out protocols for each disorder, and I'm going to name supplements that I recommend and the companies that I recommend for them. So, and it's not one or two or three companies. It'll be a diverse array of companies, the ones that I personally use. And so it will be a blueprint for how to treat each disorder. Instead of a practitioner having to decipher from all the studies, well, what's the best thing to do first? What's the second best thing? What's the third best? So I will lay it all out.
That's an amazing. Can the average person come?
Yes, they're welcome to come if they like. Sure.
Okay. All right. I want to talk later about how we can help get that information out. Okay.
Yeah, because I think I'm unique in that regard. I don't think there's any other event in the country that lays out the protocols for you like that.
Yeah, I totally agree. Okay, so we talked a little bit before the show, and we have lots of things to talk about, but, you know, I told you one of the things I was, like, hot on my burner right now is people have been finding out about MTHFR, methyl tetrahydrofolate reductase, but there's some other gene and abnormalities, I don't know what a language to use there, that are involved too, like MTR, CBS, A1298. A1298, you know, has got a little bit of attention. But I was reading just today by Amy Yatsko, a brand new book by Amy Yatsko, and she was talking about MTR.
Yeah.
And zinc, the relationship between zinc, B12, potassium, and intrinsic factor. And most people are probably, even though my audience is typically educated, they're probably not going to know what that is until you explain a little bit. Then they're going to go, oh, yes, I've been needing to know that. Could you talk about that?
Yeah. So intrinsic factor is produced in the stomach is necessary for absorption of B12. So if you don't have enough intrinsic factor, you won't absorb enough B12, and further, you need B12 for acid production in the stomach, and if you don't have enough acid, then you don't absorb calcium, magnesium, zinc, iron, vitamin B12, folate, vitamin C. Those are really key nutrients, which is why, you know, medication that suppresses acid production is such a big risk, because, for example, if you don't absorb enough zinc, it doubles your risk of pneumonia. If you don't absorb enough calcium, that doubles your risk for fracture. If you don't absorb B12 and folate because of that deficiency, then that leads to dementia for others. So you need B12 to make acid, and on the other hand, you need acid to absorb B12, so it can get you coming and going. And H. pylori is a key organism that often is involved with that. If you have H. pylori infection, it produces urease, U-R-E-A-S-E, and that leads to a more alkaline environment in the stomach where you don't absorb things. So you particularly are likely to see a B12 deficiency in the presence of H. pylori. H. pylori promotes a leaky gut type of scenario, And if I recall, you also get a manganese deficiency tied in with that. Now, the connection with MTR, and you know, I would say it would likely be true with MTRR as well, is that any mutation that inhibits the ability to convert cyanocobalamin into methylcobalamin. Cyanocobalamin is the form of B12 that's in 95 or 98% of multivitamins out there. It's the cyanide form of B12. I don't think most of us really would prefer that form. So if you have
why
that
is
mutation,
that? Why do you say that? I don't mean to interrupt, but why do you say that?
Well, I think it's not cyanide per se, but it's a precursor.
I mean, I thought you said methylcobalamin. Excuse me, sorry for interrupting.
Yeah, so I'm sorry. So cyanocobalamin is it's better to get the methylcobalamin whenever you can, because I'm finding when looking at MTR and MTR mutations that nearly all of us have at least one mutation on those genes. And if we have that mutation, we can't make that conversion to the active form of B12, and therefore we don't produce enough acid, and we don't absorb these key nutrients. And Eve, I read recently that the pineal gland, which is what, the third eye, that has about the highest concentration of B12 of any organ in the body.
Really?
So so you need B12 for optimal function of your pineal, which, and you're maybe a little bit more expert in this area than I, but I think that's a key organ for spirituality, right? For maybe connecting into, for intuitive abilities, for connecting into the other realm. Melatonin is also a very important one for the pineal gland. So for a lot of reasons, B12, an exceedingly important nutrient, and a very common deficiency. On routine blood work, for example, I'm finding when we do a simple blood count, we look at the white count, we look at the hemoglobin, hematocrit. Conventionally, I was taught that, well, if you have enlarged red cell indices, the MCV, for example, if that was elevated and you were anemic, that's pernicious anemia, which is associated with severe B12 deficiency, and that's what we were kind of taught B12 was important to avoid. But really, B12 deficiencies, I'm finding with that MCV, the normal range is listed like from 75, and this is a little bit technical, I'm sorry, but 75 up to about 97, right? But I'm finding that if the MCV is 90 or higher, that almost always a B12 deficiency is present.
So before we move forward, just to help people at home help themselves who don't have a doctor that understands, what are some symptoms that they might find or that they might have if they have an issue with intrinsic factor B12? Zinc or potassium or any of these issues, how would they know that they needed to go to see their doctor?
Okay. B12 is part of the methylation pathway, and B12, folate, B6 are the three most important nutrients in that pathway, and that pathway generates SAMe, S-adenosyl methionine, which is the fastest-acting natural antidepressant. So depressed mood would definitely be one of the symptoms associated with B12 deficiency. Low energy, because SAMe helps generate that, and also anxiety would be particularly associated with B12 deficiency. I think brain fog would be another symptom. Your brain's not going to work as well. B12 is involved in myelination of nerves, so you'd be more prone to having numbness, tingling, sensations in your hands and feet particularly. And then with zinc is a key modulator of hormones. It's an exceedingly important mineral. It blocks testosterone conversion to estrogen, and it also blocks testosterone conversion to dihydrotestosterone, which is 5 to 10 times stronger than testosterone. Dihydrotestosterone associated with male pattern hair loss, associated with hair growth in inappropriate places, associated with bossiness, aggressiveness, quick retorts, associated with complexion issues. Acne would be one symptom of zinc deficiency. In men, enlarged prostates, so men who are getting up at night to urinate might have a zinc deficiency, and then DHT, dihydrotestosterone, promotes prostate cancer as well. So most of us, I think, Eva, 80-90% of us are estrogen dominant these days. A lot of reasons: we eat too many processed foods, we don't get as much physical activity as our ancestors, and some of us, you know, I have a COMT heterozygous gene. I'm heterozygous on CYP1B1. Both of those genes, mutations in those genes, result in me holding on to estrogen more than usual. And I actually had gynecomastia in one breast 2 years ago. I thought it was it breast cancer? I didn't know. But, you know, zinc modulates that. Incidentally, it was pea protein. That was pea protein, very estrogenic, and I was getting too much of that in my smoothie. It was the main factor.
Come back and talk about that, because people aren't going to know what pea protein is. So when you get through, come back to that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
and potassium. So once again, you know, testosterone promotes courage, confidence, motivation. Okay. And so if you're low on testosterone because you're converting it all to estrogen because you don't have enough zinc, then you'll get more PMS-type symptoms. The days leading up to your period, you might feel more, you know, anxious, panicky, obsessive, phobic, sleep disturbance, irritability, carbohydrate craving, swelling, breast soreness, tenderness. So zinc, by blocking testosterone to estrogen, would help diminish PMS symptoms and would help diminish really all of those symptoms that I just listed. Potassium is a key nutrient for, it helps with blood pressure. It's important. You might get Charlie horses tied in with with potassium deficiency. You might feel weak when your potassium levels are low, particularly after a gastroenteritis is a common time to have deficiency in potassium because you lose it out through the bowels.
Sorry, this is the best thing. Not many people can give all of those things for the listeners. Thank you. It's really wonderful. So talk to us 1 second about what that pea protein was. You get it from your smoothie. So what does that tell you?
Well, so I was looking for a protein powder for my smoothie. It's difficult to find a good protein powder. I have concerns about a lot of them. Whey protein is actually the best protein that there is. One of the reasons for that is it has all the ingredients to make glutathione, the main detoxifying nutrient substrate in the body. So whey protein is very detoxifying in its effects. It also has anabolic qualities to glutamine, which is one of those three amino acids, also is the most powerful driver of growth hormone. So when you have whey protein that has glutamine in it, it's going to support bigger muscles, stronger bones, and more confidence as far as your brain function is concerned. However, about half of my patients are sensitive to whey protein when I do testing. Particularly gastrointestinal symptoms are common with that. And incidentally, with whey protein, you want to get undenatured whey protein. That's really important. You know, if you heat it, then you denature those proteins and you lose so much of the benefit. So always get undenatured whey protein. And if you put in a smoothie, add it in at the very last second. If you spin it at all, then it denatures.
Really?
Also, rice protein. You know, I think rice protein has gluten. I consider it to be 5% gluten. And it converts too readily to sugar, and I don't like, so we recommend all of our patients, except underweight patients, to get off rice protein as well as all grains. Now, underweight individuals, I'll let them have rice because that has the least gluten, in my opinion, of any of the grains. The one protein I use some is pumpkin seed powder. However, that's high in arginine. These things get complex.
Mm-hmm.
High in arginine. There are some good things about that. Arginine also supports growth hormone, but arginine suppresses lysine. Why is that important? Well, lysine is antiviral, so you're higher risk for viral infections. Linus Pauling, who won the Nobel Prize years ago, came up with a formulation of high-dose vitamin C with high-dose lysine. He used 3 grams twice a day, and proline, and found that that was a very effective regimen for protecting against coronary disease. And I have one patient who's used that regimen, and all of his relatives, all of his, you know, his brothers and sisters and parents, all had major cardiovascular issues. And he's lived 10 years beyond that without any cardiovascular issues on Linus Pauling's program. So lysine is really important. And lysine plus vitamin C instantly produces carnitine, which is a really important nutrient for mitochondrial function. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm glad you finished that. I'm just afraid if I don't blurt out and let you know, then I'll forget what I want to ask you. And then want to ask something about the last thing you said. The lysine arginine thing, that's a really big deal to me personally, because so many doctors, the first thing they do, in fact, you know, there's a guy that's got a book out that's just about that for heart disease.
Okay.
And as soon for people that have viral problems, you know, MTHFR people who have viral problems, or anybody that has a viral problem, that arginine is going to make that act up.
Absolutely.
Because of, you know, the,
yes.
And the nitrous oxide at the dentist. Can you talk just a minute about that?
Well, if you've if you're not able to generate enough glutathione, then you're going to get into trouble with any anesthetic that you're using, that a dentist or anesthesiologist, when you're having surgery, might use. So if you know, you have a mutation in MTHFR or MTR or MTRR, any of those mutations that impact the methylation cycle that generates glutathione, then you're going to have impaired ability to get rid of that anesthesia or anesthetic. And it, that was the little girl in Hawaii, right? That's what she got was nitric.
I don't know about that little girl. I just studied.
I think she had a severe reaction. And, you know, did she have an MTHFR mutation? She may well have had that. There are a number of genes that affect glutathione. But, yeah, if you know these mutations, then you can tell your dentist, you can tell your anesthesiologist, listen, I need a much lower dose of anesthesia than normal because I don't get rid of it. And hopefully you'll have an anesthesiologist or a dentist that will listen to you. And sometimes you really have to emphasize the point because they get in that routine of giving the same amount to everyone.
So can you also talk just a moment, because I know we have 1,000 things to talk about. That means you have to come back. You know that, right? about the arginine thing, because, you know, there's that, that group of doctors who wrote that book. I can't think of the name of it, but it's how, you know, heal your heart disease or something like that with arginine and nitrous oxide. Well, bad things happen for some people with viral mutation. Bad things.
Right, that's right.
Can you talk about that?
For example, herpes type 2, right?
Any of the viruses, yeah.
And what, one-third of the population just about has herpes type 2? I mean, it's highly prevalent. And so if you have an MTHFR mutation, methylation issues, as you say, you're more apt to have viral issues, so addressing those will help protect against herpes recurrences. But yeah, if you get arginine in a supplement or if you get arginine from food, so which are the foods with a lot of arginine in it? Well, potatoes, cinnamon, apples, nuts, chocolate, coffee, citrus. Okay, those are all high arginine foods. And if you get a viral infection or if you get a herpes outbreak, you want to be getting off of those foods immediately. For example, if you eat an apple and you have a cold, 20 minutes later your nose is going to be pouring out with mucus because of the impact of that arginine. So it's really critical to always balance arginine with lysine whenever you're using arginine as a supplement. And it's important, of course, to balance your meals, not to overdo those particular foods by themselves. Always balance them with other foods. But I think a lot of the cardiovascular benefits tied in with lysine have to do with the fact that it converts into carnitine when you add vitamin C, as Linus Pauling did. And carnitine, for example, when a study, when there were cardiovascular events and they gave carnitine, then there was a 27% reduction in death, a 40% reduction in recurring angina. There was a 65% reduction in ventricular arrhythmias, which are the life-threatening arrhythmias. So carnitine, a very important nutrient, amino acid for the heart health. It, you know, supporting mitochondria, it improves contractility for the heart, so it's particularly good in terms of heart failure as well for that reason.
So are there, you know, a lot of people will have to take, or a lot of people take an amino acid blend for mood disorders. So if it's amino acid blend, I don't want to say the name, but a lot of people use this one. And it really helps the mood disorder, but of course it's going to have arginine in it because they want to balance everything out. So for people that do have to get some arginine in them for whatever reason, should they supplement with lysine, or is there any contraindication with lysine?
I would bring the lysine content at least up to an equal amount of arginine. And to be honest, I would go a little higher on the lysine than the arginine. So, yeah, they could add in some lysine powder. You can get that separately. And to be honest, after, you know, I'm taking like 2 grams of lysine twice a day almost routinely because I like a little bit of dark chocolate every day. I like my raw pistachios. And incidentally, those things, also, both of those things are high in copper. Copper suppresses zinc. So I take a zinc pill whenever I eat like a cup of raw pistachios to neutralize that high copper effect. Remember how zinc modulates hormones? Mm-hmm. Well, copper, by suppressing zinc, is going to increase estrogen levels. It's going to increase dihydrotestosterone levels. And in fact, high copper levels, I find, are a marker of estrogen dominance. So copper converts into free radical readily associated with heart attack, stroke, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's. So you need some copper, but I really try to keep copper levels low and zinc levels on the high end.
Okay, 2 more questions, then we're going to move on to spirituality and those other things that we wanted to talk about. The first one is, and I'll just tell you both of them. You can answer them whatever you want to say, however you want to do it. Glutathione. Most everybody probably needs more glutathione. Do you know a way to increase that? That really works. And the second question is, what do you think about? It just went out of my ozone. Medical grade ozone in water or in air. What do you think about those things for killing viruses and oxygenating? And free radicals? What do you think about that?
Well, with ozone, I'm not an expert in that area, but my dentist had a disc problem, and he went to someone who had expertise in ozone, and using ozone, he was able to cure his lumbar disc protrusion. So he was very pleased with the procedure. I guess there's no guarantee with that. Ozone does help kill organisms, I know, in the bloodstream. And I heard a lecture by Dr. Richard Horowitz, who deals a lot with Lyme disease. He's treated over 9,000 patients with Lyme disease. And at the end of his lecture, he said, you know, because what he's found is that it's very difficult to eradicate the Lyme organism. But at the end of his talk, he said, if there are ways to eradicate it, the 3 ways might be, number one, hyperthermia, which is available through Germany. And then he mentioned, secondly, ozone therapy. And then he raised the prospect that hyperbaric oxygen might potentially be able to eradicate that. Now, with hyperbaric, you have to be careful if you utilize that, because starting out, you can have an Erxheimer, a detoxification effect when you start to use that. And, you know, there certainly needs to be a lot more research in that area, though I know there are case reports for sure where hyperbaric has helped with Lyme scenarios. So that's the best I can respond on the ozone. And remind me of the other question that you had tied in with that.
Let me ask one more question that's going to tie them kind of. What I was looking for, you know, glutathione, ozone, the middle ground there is free radicals. How do you know if you can use the ozone, whether you're going to you know, whether that it's going to mess up that methionine, or and you're going to get free radicals, or it's going to do something good.
Right.
How do you know
honestly,
that?
That's out of my area of expertise. But let me address the glutathione issue. There are all sorts of ways to boost glutathione. There are lots of high-sulfur foods. Remember, glutathione is a sulfur product. So the more sulfur foods you eat, the more you're going to generate. What are those? Well, cruciferous vegetables. Broccoli, cabbage, kale, Brussels sprouts would all support glutathione. Secondly, onions and garlic, asparagus, avocado, walnuts, are all foods that boost glutathione levels. And then there are a lot of supplements. And acetylcysteine, you know, cysteine is the rate-limiting nutrient in formation of glutathione. So N-acetylcysteine is the best form of cysteine to utilize for that purpose. And so that's readily available. It's affordable. And so you could start out. What I do with my patients, I might give 600 milligrams with breakfast and with supper for a few days because I don't want to generate too much glutathione all at once. Then you detox too fast. But I start with meals, and then after maybe 3-5 days, I go 30 minutes before breakfast and supper. And then if they have major issues, then I will bump that up maybe to 2 twice a day for detoxification. Turmeric supports glutathione. Oh, there are a number of other supplements. I use something from Natura Health Products called CV Rescue, which has resveratrol, lipoic acid, CoQ10, ubiquinol, hawthorn. So there are a lot of nutrients. MSM is another one.
Okay. All right. Now I'd like to, if you don't mind, move to your spirituality, forgiveness, and healing. I know you have some things to say about that.
Yeah. Eva, I've just been impressed, and certainly I've known how important spirituality is in the healing process. We all know that stress increases adrenaline, increases cortisol, which suppresses our immune system. We've had that knowledge for a long time, but I've had more personal experiences in terms of conversations with individuals who have had incredible healing tied in with forgiveness. And so I'm finally recognizing how powerful forgiveness is in healing. So the first person I would mention would be Dr. Jay Roberts. He's a pain clinic doctor, practiced down in Palm Springs, California, and he has a book out that you can get probably on Amazon called Break the Chains. Break the Chains. I can definitely recommend you read this book. But I cried during the book. I laughed during the book. The end of the book, I was wailing. I mean, it was so impactful. So Dr. Roberts grew up the son of a war hero, and his father wanted to make him really tough, so he would whip him with a whip, and he would beat him, and he would never show him any love because he wanted his son to be tough, right? And later, as he grew up, he wanted to get out of the household, so he went to the Philippines and went to medical school there, did a lot of wonderful mission work, and then came back operating his pain clinic, and he acquired an ALS-like syndrome, a Lou Gehrig's disease-like syndrome, and he lost use of his arms and his legs. He was 2 to 3 weeks away from death. Hospice had been consulted. He had purchased his coffin, even.
Wow.
And he had been praying to God to heal, and nothing had happened. And he said, well, you know, prisoners, they're the ones who should be suffering this disorder, not me. Why don't God take my disorder and give it to prisoners, right? But 2 to 3 weeks before he would have died, he finally said, God, I give up. Thy will be done, not my will be done. And he had met this priest, a Father Rookie, R-O-O-K-E-Y, who said, if you can say this prayer in all sincerity, you'll be healed. And one of the lines in that prayer was about forgiveness. And so finally, when he submitted to God, he tried to recall as much as he could of that prayer that Father Rookie had given him, including the line on forgiveness. And for the first time, he was able to say that with a lot of sincerity. And there was a white cloak that kind of went up over his head. And then he was at peace. And the next morning he woke up, his arms and legs worked again. He jumped out of bed. Everything worked fine. And as compensation for that, he has taken up prison ministry. He works in high-security prisons, counseling with the criminals with multi-life sentences. He's continuing his work with his pain clinic, but literally it was that act of forgiveness that healed him. And
so how long did that take for that healing to happen?
Well, I'm not sure whether it was in minutes or whether it was overnight, but it was pretty much instantaneously with that. So, and he's such a wonderful guy. I got to meet him and talk with him, and just the most terrific fellow that you would enjoy knowing. And I thought, well, that's kind of bizarre. But then I was talking with another practitioner just 2 weeks ago, and almost the identical type of story. This practitioner had been practicing, and she'd experienced abuse from her father and was on a lot of heavy-duty drugs. And as a result of that, she was somewhat spacey, and she acquired ALS as well. And it was only when she reached the point that she could forgive her father that she also got off all those medicines, detoxified, and did as much research as she could. And she actually suggested that Lyme disease is the key thing, very likely, with most ALS issues. But once she practiced complete forgiveness, she was healed from that. So I'm starting to realize this is a major issue, and that really there was a study done in Harvard, 1952, medical male students, where they assessed the relationship with your parents. Were you cool, distant? Did you have a warm, fuzzy relationship with your parents? The students who had a warm, fuzzy relationship, they went back 35 years later, and 47% of them had a chronic disorder. The ones that had a cool, distant relationship with their parents, 100% had a chronic disorder. So we carry this baggage with us through our life, and it's essential for our healing to jettison that baggage. Forgiveness is a huge part of that. We've got to forgive ourselves. We've got to forgive other people, and really that's what life is about. Life is being joyful. Life is providing service, and life is learning to forgive.
We were talking about those genetic mutations earlier, and to tie kind of into that, I've interviewed Roland McCrady many times, and at HeartMath, and Bruce Lipton many times, and within the last year, I think I've had conversations with both of them. And one thing that science has proven today, in fact, Emory is doing a study on this right now, Emory University. We know that two things causes these genes to express or not. Because you can have the genes and they don't have to express. And those two things are what you put in your mouth and what you put in your mind in a story. And that they can carry from generation for five generations. Carry and express for five generations. So, it kind of goes back, and we're not talking about religion, certainly we're talking about spirituality, but it does kind of relate to the where it talks about in the Bible, the sins of the father will be upon the children for how many ever generations,
That's right.
So it's a very interesting thing to think about. What you think or what's been put into your mind or your energy field will express those genes. Anyway, sorry. Just thought that was interesting.
And I'm just going to add an addendum to the spirituality and religion concept because, with every new patient, just about, I have a conversation with spirituality at the first visit because I feel it's so important. And I've collected 102 stories now. I may have mentioned this before, of people that have had, well, 23 now with near-death experiences, and others who've had premonitions, intuitions, have heard voices that averted tragedy, or have seen visions. So I've accumulated 102 stories just in a little over a year, tied in with that. And about half of those stories, Jesus is a key figure, either with the near-death experiences or with visions or voices. And I've just finished reading the Aquarian Gospel, which talks about Jesus in the interim years from when he was in his youth versus when he started his ministry, and then also talked, you know, after, you know, when the resurrection occurred, how he visited, you know, the Far East at that time and other areas. I personally believe that he probably came to visit the Indians and others. So the Aquarian Gospel really broadened my horizon with this. So I think with Jesus, people think of him in association with Christianity, but I think he was a substantial influence across most or all religions, and is still, I find, somehow a key factor with all of this. So that's a little bit off the point, but I found that fascinating. The Aquarian Gospel is something that really resonated with me. I can encourage individuals who want to explore and understand religion a little bit better. But, you know, Eva, you're absolutely right. Spirituality is the key thing. It's love, our connection into the universe, understanding quantum physics, how we're all just energy fields, and I just love that whole area.
I do too. Not only do I love it, it is literally my life.
Yeah,
it is my life,
and it changes things. You know, if you forgive yourself, if you forgive other people, if you stop judging people, I was thinking, you know, happiness is when you cease judging other people. When the second you start to judge someone else, you immediately become unhappy in the process. I was thinking even when I was in church today that, you know, there are different individuals in the congregation that I would judge for this reason or that reason.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I've eliminated that, I find, wow, I'm so much happier now that I don't have that judgment.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing I frequently say to people who I talk about that's complaining about or judging someone, you only think to accuse or judge or complain about something that you know about. So if you do it yourself, you are more than like, I mean, if you complain about that or if it bothers you, then you are more than likely doing it yourself, because in quantum mechanics, you know, reality is not real because there's no matter on the quantum level. So it's a hologram. So really what you are seeing is projections of a mirror of yourself.
Yeah.
So the things you complain about, look at you, because you're doing it to somebody.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Absolutely.
We have about 12 or 13 minutes left, and we have to literally finish up at 13 minutes, or he'll cut us off. But I know that you wanted to talk about SpectraCell, but I'm also going to let you take that time. If you want to keep talking about spirituality, that suits me fine. But if you want to talk about SpectraCell or anything else, you have this last few minutes to talk about whatever you want to talk about.
Let's talk about SpectraCell for a while, because SpectraCell does micronutrient testing, and they do some other tests as well that are particularly good. But my favorite test with SpectraCell is the micronutrient analysis, where they look inside lymphocytes to determine nutrient levels. So it's more of a 3 to 6 month snapshot of what your nutrient status is. And so I've done 3 micronutrient tests on myself, and you know, they check every single vitamin, 6 minerals, key amino acids, and key nutrients like CoQ10, lipoic acid, glutathione. So it gives a wealth of information. And on my initial testing, I identified some deficiencies that I had. I addressed those, and then I repeated it, and those were corrected. And then I kind of backslid a little bit. I was still supporting all those areas originally deficient, but I wasn't dosing it as aggressively. And when I did my third micronutrient profile, the original deficiencies had come right back. So it identifies lifelong tendencies as far as nutrient deficiencies that reflect metabolism, absorption of nutrients, affect to some degree genetics, and many other factors. So for me, this is vital. Every patient that walks in the door, I want to do micronutrient testing to find out. And certainly it helps. You can look at folate, B6, B12, those key methylation nutrients, but also there are a slew of other nutrients that affect methylation. Vitamin B2, serine, choline are other ones that affect the methylation pathway. And so the more those you identify and address, then the better off you're going to be in the long haul. I look at that copper-zinc balance, which I find so critical, as I mentioned earlier. You know, copper tied in with estrogen dominance converts into free radical, promoting inflammation. So I like to keep copper in that lower end of the normal range and zinc at the very high end of the normal range to help address that issue. And so on this testing, you can find out about that. You know, get a good view of vitamin D, which I want also up near the top. Remember, vitamin D also helps with estrogen dominance. It boosts testosterone, lowers estrogen. Remember, estrogen promotes autoimmune activity in the body. You know, if you give estrogen a lupus, it'll make lupus worse. Really, if you give estrogen in any autoimmune condition, that makes it worse. And so that's tied in with high copper. You give zinc, and that's going to help all your autoimmune conditions improve. Obviously, if glutathione is low, I want to know about that so I can detox more effectively. CoQ10 is my number one blood pressure nutrient. So one study showed a 16/11 drop in blood pressure. Well, actually, it was a meta-analysis of 8 studies that showed a 16/11 drop in blood pressure with 100 to 200 milligrams of CoQ10 over a 4 to 6 week period of time. So.
What is a good blood pressure for middle-aged people?
So a good blood pressure would be, I would say 120 to 130. You get maybe a little bit older, say up above 65. I would even say 125 to 135 might be a more optimal reading. You know, there was research even back last spring in the Journal of American Medical Association. I don't think most doctors saw this research, but it showed that if your blood pressure, if you were on prescription blood pressure medicine and your blood pressure fell to between 110 and 120 systolic, that for every stroke that it prevented, it caused 2 heart attacks. In other words, if you're on prescription medicine, your blood pressure is 116 systolic, you're higher risk for having an event. So you've got to keep it above 120. And then there was a meta-analysis.
Wow, that's amazing. So what did you say the number should be?
So
about the systolic what's an optimal?
I think generally 120 to 130 up to about age 65, and maybe 125 to 135 after that age would be reasonable. Now, the Cochrane International...
In the bottom number?
I think the bottom number, some research has showed that the diastolic of 85 is the optimal diastolic for coronary artery filling pressure. In other words, to get the most coronary artery perfusion, blood flow, a diastolic of 85 is best.
So I'm just shocked almost that it can be what appears to be normal to some doctors is really too low and contributes.
Yes, yes. So
wow.
Most doctors, I don't think, have adjusted to that new research. But, yeah, there's so many patients that are being overtreated with blood pressure medicine right now. And so another meta-analysis by Cochrane International, this was reported a year and a half ago after reviewing 4 studies, found that prescription medicine is only justified when your systolic is 160. Okay?
Wow.
And that's because of the side effects tied in with blood pressure medicines. For example, hydrochlorothiazide, the fluid pill, the common blood pressure medicine, increases your blood sugar, right? It causes magnesium deficiency, so it could lead to sudden death, causes potassium deficiency. raises uric acid levels, increasing gout incidence. So these prescription drugs have substantial side effects. It's only, according to that review, when you reach 160 that a prescription medicine is justified. Now, that said, you still want to keep your blood pressure at the lower end of the range. In younger individuals, 135 versus 115 doubles your risk of heart attack. 155 quadruples your risk of heart attack, stroke, and 175 even worse. So using natural things, and there are so many wonderful natural things. Now, I use pycnogenol some. It's a GABA agent that kind of dilates the arteries. It's a good one to give 30 minutes before bedtime, promotes sleep, promotes sexuality, too, incidentally, by probably some Viagra-type effect, improving perfusion of the genitals. So pycnogenol, P-Y-C-N-O-G-E-N-O-L, that's French pine bark extract, a cousin of grapeseed extract, is a good one. But I mentioned CoQ10. I prefer to use ubiquinol. That's the active form of CoQ10. Hawthorn, a wonderful one, maybe three Hawthorn a day. For those who can do cayenne, that's an excellent one. Garlic is also good. So you really, and plus you want to detoxify those arteries, get the heavy metals out of the arteries, and also decalcify. Magnesium, vitamin K, and vitamin D help decalcify the arteries, and then you can reverse hypertension if you do those things.
I have to tell you something. 15 years ago, at least, I went to, and I'm 54. I went to the doctor. I was less than 45 at the time, 40, 45. I went to the doctor, and I was complaining about putting on weight because I had a baby when I was 40. And my doctor said, you know, I can give you some hydrochlorothiazide, and you'll immediately lose 5 pounds. Can you believe that?
Because you're dehydrated.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, wow.
I can't believe it.
He's right, but it's just water going out. Nothing else changes.
When I look back, I'm like, oh, my God, I can't believe the doctor would tell me that.
Right.
And I want to say this about your SpectraCell test. Probably 10 or 12 years ago, I interviewed Jonathan. I can't think of his last name. And well, three people from SpectraCell on three different tests that they do, the heart test, the telomeres test, and the micronutrient test.
Yeah.
It's been at least a decade. If I'd have listened to Jan Troop, that was who it was, if I'd have listened to everything they told me, I would have never have had a heart attack. Those SpectraCell tests, all of them, were, and I can tell you this today, were 100% accurate.
They have a wonderful kind of lipoprotein profile that looks at homocysteine levels, which incidentally I think 6 to 7 is optimal. Looks at lipoprotein A. If that's elevated, that doubles your risk for heart attack or stroke. Looks at insulin level, which very few other tests really look at, as well as the particle numbers of LDL and HDL. So a valuable test that I strongly recommend.
Do you have any idea, does insurance pay for this, or how much does it cost? How much would it cost for somebody who didn't have it? Well, I guess everybody has to have insurance with Obamacare, I guess. But
with insurance, ballpark, you're looking at about, if you're below 65, if you don't have Medicare, you're looking at about $200 copay with that. But remember, you're getting 31 tests. With that, plus you're getting a Spectrox test and an Immudex. The Spectrox kind of gives you analysis of how many antioxidants you have on board. The Immudex gives a level of how strong your immune system is. So it's an incredible amount of information that you get for just $200. And you know, if you can do it just once in your life, just to find out those basic nutritional deficiencies that you're prone to having, then that's worth doing for sure once in your life. Now, one caution I would have is that, you know, when you look at the folate and B12 levels on the SpectraCell, you've always got to also look at MTHFR and MTR and MTRR mutations to fully interpret it. Because, you know, if you get a low normal folate level, then that they're measuring folic acid on that test. And so if you're homozygous on C677T and only converting 30% of folic acid to folate, you can have a normal folic acid level. So always look at MTHFR with that, because if you've got mutations there, then you're going to need to support methylfolate.
And they do that, right?
Yes, they offer an MTHFR test.
Okay. Well, we've got about 1 minute, and you have been absolutely fabulous. Thank you. Really, you have. Please tell us again where to find you, and one more time where they might take a look at that conference.
Come to my conference. Kentucky, mid-May is wonderful. So drroach.net, drroach.net is for the conference. And then my regular website, the Midway Center. Be sure to have the T-H-E, Midway Center, C-E-N-T-E-R.com is my patient portal. And I have blogs posted on that periodically to try to keep my patients updated. So would love to have you come on both sites. I do offer some free reports if you get on. So get on tonight and take advantage of those free reports.
Thank you, Dr. Roach, so much. You have been the best. I know you're very busy, and I really do appreciate your taking time out for me and my listeners. Thank you.
Well, I'm very honored. You're a wonderful person. Thanks for all
you
do.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.